Hai, Assalamualaikum dan salam sejahtera. Saya berada di sini di Kuching, Sarawak, Borneo. I'm here where I like to be the best nowadays because the fight for sustainability, the fight for all the SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, it is mainly here. Because a lot of things that we have done that we cannot take back in the peninsula of Malaysia. But right here in Borneo, this is where we must pitch the fight. This is where thought leadership and action must go hand in hand. And if I can make an invite, I would like to invite Greta Thunberg to come here because we do not destroy people, flora and fauna, just going for eternal wealth. Hence, I can't be talking with myself on this. We all know this. We need to talk to the best in the world of what they do for us to come together because we only have one planet Earth. There's no point in saving only Borneo because if the sea levels rises to a certain extent, even Borneo will be smaller in terms of the land area. So to answer this global fight and task and question is a global superpower, I call them, because and as a global association with the name power in it, it's called the International Hydropower Association. And in the post-Cold War era, this might be the new superpower that you have to look at. And the name is Eddie Rich. Thank you so
Thank
much for
you.
Making time.
Thank you, Cam.
You're the CEO, Chief Executive Officer of IHA, the National Hydropower Association. You know, before we started this recording, I asked him, how many thousands of hydropower dams are there in the world? 52,000 and counting, or more, maybe 60 plus. So it is powerful from a numbers game. It is powerful from the fact that most of the renewable contribution comes from hydropower.
Correct, yes.
And I keep hearing at this Sustainability and Renewable Energy Forum, SAREF 2019 in BCCK Kuching, that is the most cost-effective, cheapest source of renewable energy you can have. So how does it feel to be the CEO of the most powerful renewables energy association? I've never had
well,
a chance.
Well, still got a long way to go.
Okay.
I mean, not only is there, you mentioned a lot of dams and a lot of power that's going on, but there is still a lot of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just having the power, the capacity out there, the installed capacity, it doesn't mean that it's always going to be cheap. It
okay.
doesn't mean that it's always going to get to the right place. A lot of that depends on demand. It depends on where the positions, the dams are placed,
okay.
the plants. We need to do a lot more in terms of lifting the amount
yes.
and making sure that it's sustainable.
Yeah.
So bigger and better.
Correct. I can't do it on stage because of the, you know, it's a very specific forum. But on this show, I want to ask you this. If renewable energy is so good, why are people around the world, including in developed countries, against it? They are saying that, you know, you have to sacrifice flora and fauna. Even people have to be relocated for this. It's a long gestation period
yeah.
of a project to do a large hydro dam. And that's it, you know, like...
Yeah.
Like all that is supposed to equalize the benefit or not make it in the negative. How would you answer these kind of critics?
Well, there's very valid arguments there. I mean, not all hydropower is good.
Mm.
Not all of it is sustainable.
Okay.
I mean, and there are concerns. But there is a lot of very good sustainable
yeah.
hydropower
okay.
out there, and they have multiple benefits.
Mm.
It's not just the production
Correct.
Of energy. It can
mm.
be flood and drought control, mm. it can be irrigation, it can be fresh water management, it can be transport and even
mm-hmm.
Tourism and fishing activities and so on. So you can do a lot with
okay.
Hydropower. A lot of dams, even hydroelectric dams, weren't built first and foremost for electricity. They were built
yeah.
for flood control
Correct.
Or for drought control.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There are good reasons that dams are built.
Mm-hmm.
There are good reasons that many
yes.
of them are hydroelectric.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also big concerns. Whenever
mm-hmm.
anybody builds big infrastructure.
Yes.
There should be, you know, this is often very difficult stuff involving displacement and flora and fauna and those issues. So we need tools, we need to be able to assess.
Allow me to help you a bit there in this discussion where let's look at the signs of things here.
Yeah.
The fact is we cannot go on releasing greenhouse gases and carbons into the atmosphere, period, right? This is what Greta Thunberg, you know, taking 1 year of school, only 16, going around and even scolding our top leaders of the world.
Yes.
Question is, how do we do that? How do we stop releasing carbon and, you know, improving other stuff? So renewable, at least for now, the reality of now, the more than 50% of the carbons being released, they are from the energy sector.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if we straight away build up the capacity of hydropower so that directly we can get off the coal, get off fossil fuel, for example, to create energy that needs to power our civilization and modernity. Can I put it that way? Because
yes,
that's scientifically proven.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's it would be moving off the dependency on hydrocarbons and moving to hydropower and other renewable energy sources, other sustainable energy sources is very important.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no route to do that,
yes,
which involves zero greenhouse emissions. Mm-hmm. And if you flood a place and build a reservoir and build a dam, then there will be some greenhouse gases. But you're right, over the life cycle of the dam and its usefulness, which
this
is often over 100 years.
This is the best we have.
Yeah, this is this is it's the way, it must be the way forward.
Okay. Now, if that is the case, I'm just thinking, sometimes many things in the world starts with good intention, but where it ended up is what a lot of people are worried about.
Yeah.
And in the days where communication is no longer the purview of a single point to multiple point, but multiple point to multiple point, anyone can say anything to anyone in the world.
Mm.
People are very concerned that transparency and the control of projects, huge projects, are not in the hands of the people.
Mm.
Because look at the financing of a large hydropower dam. Billions of US dollars over many years. A lot of supply chain, and normal layman cannot go into it. So what I'm trying to get at, if the science backs the fact that we need hydropower, how do we ensure the supply chain from, you know, the surveys to commissioning to the actual building of hydropower are every step of the way sustainable in every sense of the word? Which river to choose, which part of the river, how large of an acreage to be swarmed with water. Can this be, you know, liberated in the sense where with technology like blockchain, shared ledger, maybe we can follow every step of the process, and for every watt utilized and transmitted, we can also see them like a big chessboard.
That can be done, yes. And we have worked with governments, with scientific experts, and with NGOs, with campaigners and on the social and environmental side, to develop tools that do take you all the way through the value chain, all the way through the design and then the construction and the operation phases, to try to make sure that each stage of that and each question that you face in that is taken from a sustainability point of view. And we assess, and here in Sarawak, Sarawak Energy has done a number of those assessments on the dams that they have here. Mm. And they've also trained up their staff to be able to continue to make those assessments. As time
imagine there's
on.
No Sarawak Energy executive behind the camera. I want your honest opinion, professional opinion, that where are we in Malaysia in terms of adhering to all this? You know, on stage, I moderated a lady who introduced me to ESIA, Environmental and Social Impact Assessment, right? So where are we in trying to do the best of that? Because she gave an example of, I think, Mong Ton, a project in Myanmar, which is supposed to be a bigger thing. But once they went in and see the impact, ecological and otherwise, they scale it down and make it cascading kind of project. So from that point of view, where do you rate Malaysia right now? A huge part of that is in Sarawak. In terms of our level of adhering to all this?
I don't know, is the honest answer. I haven't looked at it on a country basis. I'm aware of some of the projects that have been going on here in Sarawak, and they have been assessed against these tools, and the gaps have been identified, and the company is working with the community and with the government to try to address those gaps. Mm. And that's the honest, open and sensible way forward to try to do this. Nobody is expected to go into this assessment and get 100% it's done with, I believe, with sincerity.
If you've never heard it, you have to really stalk the term SAREF, Sustainable and Renewable Energy Forum, for the first time 2019 right here at BCCK. Thank you to Sarawak Energy for making this possible. I never thought I would sit with the number one officer, CEO of IHA, International Hydropower Association. There are more than 50,000 over hydropower dams in the world. So, but the question is, we can't afford any more climate change. We can't afford any more really unpredictable weather that caused billions of damages across the world and loss of lives. And renewable is in, but a huge component for now is looking at hydropower. So this is what I'm going to ask you. It's very clear from the slides presented at SAREF 2019 by the World Bank specialists, senior specialists, that 90% of, you know, financing of the large hydropower project over the last decade are all by public funding, by governments, by the public sector, meaning taxpayers' money. More and more we're seeing results like the referendum for Brexit, right, where... Yeah. People are saying that, you know, yeah, all well and good, European Union, everything, but we want to protect our interests first.
Yes.
So if we don't talk about how do we sway public opinion to be aware, to understand why we need to allocate a huge fund to build huge hydropower dams, then how is it going to be? How are you going to tackle this with your association?
Yeah, it's an important question. Look, we in the International Hydropower Association, we exist to advance sustainable hydropower. So in many ways, we take up the baton once the decision is made and make sure that we can help in making it sustainable. Now, having said that, I mean, there is something very specific about the nature of hydropower plants in that when you build one, that may be in place for 100 years.
Yes.
These are long-term decisions.
Correct.
And often our financial markets are not very well attuned to long-term decisions.
Who wants to get profit only after 100 years?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, pension funds are long-term, but that's 20 years away. It's not, 100 years away. And that's the challenge. And I guess that is why you see it so closely associated with public funding, which can take the longer-term view. You need to see the involvement of the public utilities are necessary because of the relationship with transmission grids and so on. So it's not surprising that there is a higher level of public ownership in this sector than in most others.
Okay.
But indeed, there are so many independent private operators out there doing some interesting stuff, and they need the markets and okay. regulatory framework to help them.
Okay. That's my doomsday scenario. Now, I'm a very optimistic person, contrary to popular opinion. I would like to look at great opportunities, you know, that we have. Because we can talk about problems until eternity, but what are the solutions? So if we look at it, it's fine if you do not want to build a dam in your country. Because this thing called interconnected greed, for example, you can take it from some other nations, for example. In fact, even if you want to do hydropower dam, your topography in your country around you might not be suitable for that. So I have a great person on my panel also, Kwan, and he talks about Asia being a, almost, from my interpretation, a single battery where, you know, you can take from the east to go to the west, like how China is doing. You know, most of their factories and industrial places are on the east, but their generation of power comes from the west.
Yeah.
And that was the old Silk Road. And now the Silk Road have lines of transmission power their, you know, modernity, reducing hardcore poverty from 88% to single digit in just one generation, for example. But is this more ideal rather than you know, real? Because how do you get different nations to agree to almost a singular infrastructure like an Asian connected grid, for example? Is this the bulk of the things coming into your meetings right now? Because if this happens, coupled with smart grid, coupled with blockchain, my God, we could really be giving Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old, something really positive to talk about.
Yeah, it's a very important aspiration. It's the right aspiration. And there is a lot of complexity, as you suggest, in terms of the politics of it, in terms of the technology of it, in terms of the infrastructure required to do it. This is by no means a straightforward concept, but it can be a great way to tie countries together and to help them to cooperate. I spent the last decade of my life in Scandinavia.
Yes.
And you know, Norway and Denmark and Sweden, they all have complementary energy sources.
Okay.
So if the wind isn't blowing in Denmark, they take water from Norway.
Okay.
And that binds them together politically, economically, and you know, that is from a single connectivity of a pooled grid, and so it is possible. We do see it in places, but it's a complex thing to get.
Let me frame it from a layman perspective. So it's doable in terms of technology, right?
It is doable, yes. Okay. I think it's difficult.
It's doable in terms of the commercial viability of it, right? If you have enough fund, there's enough demand. We know there will never be enough energy to... We are building so many things, and many countries are progressing. The movement of the B40 to the M40 middle class are getting bigger.
Yeah.
So there'll be more things produced, right? So the only thing stopping it from happening is people coming together, especially leaders.
And money. I mean, this is what they've done in China has been a major investment.
All right. Public fund?
Well, in China, yes. But it doesn't necessarily need to be public funds. So that it is all possible. I think we'll see that equation, particularly on the finance, possibly change over time.
Okay. Don't you think that, of course, you guys don't produce engineers, but you are the recipients of these products of our education system. And more people are thinking, sometimes we're approaching them too late because the world we have are from the products of the best Ivy League graduate universities. What we need is also a reset, a new way of learning. In the Silicon Valley, you have the Singularity University. In France, you have the level 42, where it's all about design thinking and problem solving, for example. Do you think that we need this kind of a reset, education-wise, for us to have a new rethink? Of course, it seems ideal, but then again, we are being faced by challenges that no mankind civilization has ever faced before.
Look, there's definitely a mindset shift that's going to have to happen. If we are going to meet the Paris targets, it's a mind shift throughout society.
Yes.
But delivery of bigger and better hydropower is central to it.
Okay.
And I very much hope that we are able to be part of that transition, build the incentives, both in the engineering part of it, but also in the financial and the political aspects to make that transition, that mind shift happen.
I want to go away a bit from hydropower specifically, because when I look at your bio, you're not an engineer, you're not a financier, you've even worked in Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative. Oh my God, I've never heard of this. You are super cool. So people talk about transparency, but you were in an organization that looked specifically at that.
Yes.
So I'm just going to come at you like this. I believe that discourse is the new enabler in the modern society, because what is not discussed doesn't get looked, and what doesn't get looked wouldn't get improved. And with AI, artificial intelligence, even stories are being done by supercomputers. Mm. So we could know more and do more with the help of new technologies. Coming from your background, don't you think that the biggest problem of the world, which is the destruction of nature as we know it, could actually be halted by just a single attitudinal change, not just mindset change, of mankind? You know, we look so much at going to Mars and everything else, when the real answer, just like James Cameron and the movie Avatar, is going back to the very basic of it all, and, you know, really appreciating life as nature has done.
Well, that's a big question, Cam. I mean, I think we do need to be well informed in our discussions, and I'm not sure that people do have the information in front of them. I think the good governance, transparency, collecting the data to make these decisions are critical to all of this. And I do think what I learned in the Extractive Transparency Initiative, which is also very relevant in the hydropower sector, is drawing in industry with governments and civil society.
All the stakeholders.
Yeah, this multi-stakeholder approach to make sure that, you know, it's not industry just regulating itself, not coming in saying, we've done a good dam here and this is going to, this is all sustainable. It's actually, you know, a joint discussion and agreement.
Yeah, because I think we can forgive some skeptics out there, because they've seen the fossil fuel industries where they make billions and then they have the CSR effort. It's like trying to beautify the Titanic that we know is sinking anyway. But hydropower and renewable is a big game changer. So if there's one hope that you're going to pick up from there, what is it that you want to share with the audience?
Well, I think I go back to where I started. Hydropower has to be bigger and it has to be better.
True.
We need more of it and we need it to be sustainable.
Fair enough. I am in Sarawak. It's the biggest hydropower producer for Malaysia.
Yes,
And I think you're going to come here more and more. I think Southeast Asia is going to maybe answer your question partly, if not wholly. But I'm going to leave you with this. Thank you so much, Eddie Rich, for making
time. Thank you very much, Cam.
Google IHA, the National Hydropower Association. But what's the point of discussing the highest of technology, the biggest of hydropower dam, if we don't appreciate things like this? My producer wanted me to take this off for this discussion because he's trained well. We don't wear things like this, you know. But this is not just for show. This is done by the Kenyah people, especially if you're a Pemanca, you wear stuff like this. And they were relocated because a dam was built in their area. But you know what? Their life has improved. They can drive cars right up to their new settlement. the ladies cannot drive and it's not subservient to the man to bring them out of the forest. Of course, there's an offset, but at least in Malaysia, in Sarawak in particular, we're trying to do the best that we can, acknowledging the reality in front of us and still thinking of living enough, if not more, for the generation of the future. This is Kamaru Baharin reporting and talking and discussing for Agenda Awani with the greatest hydropower mind as thought leaders right here at SAREF 2019. Thank you, SEB. I'll see you again soon.